Since 2014, when VA reform legislation became law, the Veterans Affairs Department has been expanding its network of outside health care providers. The Choice Program recently underwent a major review, and joining me with highlights and what's ahead for this massive program, Dr. Bali Yahia, the Assistant Deputy Undersecretary for Health at the Veterans Health Administration. Dr. Yahia, great to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
So Choice has grown, and you've had some statistics in this new report, 2 million appointments through the Choice Program, 350,000 outside healthcare providers. Put those numbers in context for us. Is 2 million a lot in the context of all VA appointments?
So 2 million is actually a lot when you think of the context of the program. So the program, as you said, just started about 2 years ago, and we were kind of hit the ground running from the start. And we've been able to see a massive increase in appointments and authorizations for care over the last 2 years, mostly over the last year or so, where the program has started now to work out some of the kinks and continue to grow. And when we think of providers, we know that we have veterans that live in every corner of the United States. And we don't have VA physicians or clinicians or facilities in every single location. And so those partnerships with community providers and hospitals across the country are very important. And our network now has grown by 85% over the last 12 months to include all these different hospitals and practices across the country that help us serve veterans.
Now, we should say, too, that this is not the first time VA has paid for outside care, correct?
That's absolutely correct. A lot of folks may not know that VA has been in the business of purchasing care for veterans for decades. We started with partnerships with academic hospitals and working with them to get our veterans into care at some of the top academic hospitals in the country. We've also had strong partnership with the DoD, so the military treatment facilities working with them, as well as with private doctors across the country. So the Choice Program really was just another avenue to buy care.
So with 2 million people making, or 2 million appointments being made by people, maybe it's more than one per person, under the Choice Program, are these only the ones that fulfill the requirement they have to live 40 miles from a facility and so forth? There were a lot of requirements before you could get that. And that 2 million is from those people?
That's right. The law, the Choice Law, actually has a very specific set of eligibility criteria. The two biggest criteria are those 40 miles that you mentioned, 40 miles from a primary care physician, and then 30 days from the date. And so those are typically the two biggest criteria that a veteran would have to meet in order to qualify for the Choice Program. But we also have others. So if they live very far away, or there's a mountain or a lake or something geographic, even though they're within 40 miles, we can make various exceptions. Or if they have a certain medical condition that prevents them from driving far, or they need to be seen even sooner. So while the biggest two criteria are what we refer to as 30 days and 40 miles, there's a number of other ones that we can use to make sure that veterans get the care that they need.
And with the fast expansion of the provider network, now up to 350,000, you said an 85% expansion, how did you vet them all to make sure that they're not quacks or drugstores or whatever?
Yeah, that's a great question. So again, in our law, there's a specific requirement of the type of credentials that a facility or a provider needs to have to join the network. And so we're able to get them to that standard, you know, making sure that they have the right credentials, the right license. But in all honesty, we want to go even above and beyond that, because the era of medicine that we're living in now is really focused on making sure that populations have informed choices about which doctors they need, making sure that the doctors they're selecting are delivering high quality care and also are able to meet their needs in a culturally competent way. And so we hope that this network continues to evolve over time to help veterans identify who are the top providers, what sort of services do they offer. And so again, it's surpassing that minimal bar and really giving them more choices that they can make about which person they choose to see.
Any thought of dropping that 40-mile requirement or asking Congress to drop it? And then that would really put VA hospitals in full competition with the healthcare industry as the rest of it is constituted.
Well, the way we think about it is really as an integrated health network. We think that there's a role for both the community and for the VA to play here. The VA has a very unique opportunity in how they deliver certain services. And probably the heart of it is primary care and mental health care, how we integrate the two together. And then a ton of other services that we offer veterans that, frankly, practicing both in the VA and the private sector doesn't always exist outside the walls of the VA. And so what we're building here is really an integrated, high-performing network that has the best of VA and the community together.
So does that mean that it eventually might be open to everybody who is eligible for VA care, not just the distant people, but for everybody?
Well, we have many different programs today of actually delivering care. And so about 20%, 25% of veterans get some care in the community today. So we already have a very large proportion of our population that accesses community care. And another interesting fact is that a lot of our veterans actually have health insurance. And so about 80% of our veteran population has another form of health insurance outside of the VA. And so there's, you can kind of think of it in three groups. There's care that VA delivers inside, there's care that VA purchases outside, and then there's veterans that have another health insurance that they go see their community doc without us even being involved.
Yeah, if you need your monthly Lipitor refill, why go to VA if you can do it down the street?
Yeah, I think a lot of people actually for medicines, it's interesting. They prefer to go to the VA. We have some amazing pharmacy programs and definitely a cost advantage over others.
Sure. We're speaking with Dr. Bally Yahia, Assistant Deputy Undersecretary for Health Community Care at the Veterans Health Administration. And now let's move on to the idea of consolidating. It seems counterintuitive that you're in such an expansion mode with choice and community care. What is the consolidation all about?
Thank you for that. So VA has more than one way of purchasing care, and each of them was kind of homegrown in a way or passed by Congress or asked us to do a specific program that served a set purpose. But then when you start layering them on top of each other, one after the other, it actually starts to create confusion and detracts. And so our goal here is to create a program that's simple to administer, easy to understand, and meets the needs of veterans, our community partners, and our VA employees. And the way that we want to get there is a program that has a single set of eligibility criteria so that veterans know if they have a benefit in the community or not, a streamlined referral and authorization process so that if we are sending a doctor, a patient, it comes in a consistent way and hopefully electronically, a robust network of providers so that veterans can choose among the different doctors that exist in the community today, and then really improve our payment processes so we can make sure that we pay timely and accurately for our community partners. And kind of wrapped throughout all of that is a focus on care coordination and customer service. And so I think consolidation makes a lot of sense here in that how do we combine all these different unique programs together into something that is probably greater, like the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
So you're not consolidating the choice program, but rather integrating it with all the other outside care programs to make kind of a single, I guess, portal for outside care.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
I guess that would make it easier for those providers that might be in more than one program from the outside also.
That is absolutely true. One of the challenges that we've had with the choice program is it's just a different way of doing care. When the law was passed, VA actually had only about 3 months to stand up this very large national program. And just to put into perspective, TRICARE had about 3 years. And so we had a lot of different challenges. In addition to the short time period, there was requirements in the law that made us behave very differently than how VAs behaved in the past or from the private sector. And so that definitely created some confusion to the docs because they may be working with us under a different program, but they might get reimbursed differently or they have to submit the bills a different way. And so we want to take all of that complexity out and make it simple so they have one way to submit their bills, and we pay a consistent rate that is published and that people are aware of.
It sounds simple to say, but I imagine it's fiendishly difficult to actually get done.
Yes, the devil is definitely in the details, and we have, there's many things that VA can do by ourselves, but in all honesty, we need a lot of help from Congress to change some laws and the way that we operate, and then also we need to make sure that we partner with our veterans, our veteran service organizations, and our community providers to design the right system that makes sense for them.
And this is all your job to do this?
Not just my job, luckily. It's an entire team of folks at the VA and in the community and our veteran groups that are working to drive this forward. So it's really been a team effort.
And I wanted to ask you about medical health records, electronic health records. That's a big issue for VA, for DOD, the integration. And then you've got all these records generated by outside providers. What is the pathway to make sense of that aspect of care?
So this is a great question, because we have an opportunity here at VA to really start to lead more in this area. Because what you're describing is not unique to VA or DOD. This is American medicine today. It is a challenge for doctors in the community to be able to exchange records electronically. Many practices nowadays have an electronic health record, but the problem is that record doesn't talk to another record. And so what we're trying to do here is move in the direction of having more health information exchanges, so that you don't actually have to transfer paper back and forth. A computer system can ping another computer system and get information out. And then also moving more towards the direction of a portal. So there is a way, a gateway, that community providers and VA can enter into and actually look at records versus going back and forth. And we have some of that today with our DoD partners. It's called the Joint Legacy Viewer, which allows both VA and DoD to have read-only access of each other's records. We want to take some of those principles and now transfer it to the community. And those are some of the things that we're working on.
So that sidesteps the issue of everybody having the same compatible record system.
Exactly. If you're able to find an exchange or in another way, a way to assimilate those two pieces of information, everyone doesn't have to have the same exact IT health record.
And one of the elements of the Consolidation Plan or the Choice Improvement Act that the Congress asked you to look at was, besides medical records management, was plans to use current non-department provider networks and infrastructure. Briefly describe what that's all about.
Sure. We have, as I was describing before, we've partnered with community providers for decades. And so we have a lot of really good relationships with these institutions across the country. It may be large academic hospitals where we have a lot of joint faculty and many times are located right across the street from our VA hospitals. It may be through partnerships with DOD where we are working with military treatment facilities to see our patients. It may be with other federal entities like Indian Health Service or the Tribal Health Partners. It could be with community health centers through the FQHC program or just various doctors. So all of those kind of combined, those relationships were built over the course of decades so that our front desk staff knows their frontline desk staff. And so our goal here is to leverage those relationships rather than kind of reinventing the wheel.
So as you get to this consolidation plan, it could take years, I guess, from the way you describe it. How will you do it? Who do you convene? What is the mechanism, the process for making this kind of thing happen?
Sure. Transformation definitely takes a long time. And so our goal here is to make sure that we're making incremental steps along the way. We call them our innovative solutions. We want to deliver innovative solutions to veterans, to community providers in the field as we go forward. And the way that I describe it is, people shouldn't be expecting some grand reveal in a couple years where we, you know, have some ribbon cutting and say, here's our new program. In fact, what we want it to feel like is that there's changes occurring incrementally over time. We're adding this component, we're consolidating this component, we're streamlining this part. And slowly it will become to function better and better and better. So you kind of have to tackle it one step at a time. If you think of the entire task, it could be very daunting. And so we are taking it one step at a time.
It sounds like you're almost taking an agile approach.
Absolutely. We think that that's very important, that we can adapt to the local market and the specific needs of veterans. And we are trying to make sure that we have the right solutions that make sense.
And you mentioned, too, that some of these changes you'd like to make require congressional approval or a congressional change in law. Is that because each of the existing programs to integrate each had its own enabling legislation?
That's right. A lot of them have specific legislative authority, or there are actually some that are very specific programs that were set in statute. Others are various authorities. And our goal really is to get to that process that I was describing, where we have a clear set of eligibility criteria, a single way of doing referrals and authorizations, making sure that we have the right type of credentials and a network that's built in the right areas with the right doctors and clinicians in it, a way to consistently do care coordination so no veteran falls through the cracks, and then a very specific claims process that providers get paid timely and accurately. And so that's kind of how we get to consolidation, is because every one of these programs today has a little bit of a different take on each of those different pieces. And if we can get all those pieces in line, we can streamline the process and make it much more user-friendly for veterans than what it is today.
Dr. Bali Yahia is Deputy Undersecretary for Health and Community Care at the Veterans Health Administration. And what about the people inside the VA facilities themselves, all those Title V and Title 38 employees? They must be part of this whole consolidation plan, too, since they're the chiaro to the scuro of the outside providing.
Yes, we have been working very closely with a lot of not only...
I should have said yin and yang, it's better.
Not only leadership, but a lot of folks that this is their full-time job. They are on the front line serving veterans in the community. And it becomes so critically important to work very closely with each of our VA facilities, because the thing that's going to make this work is care coordination. In the era of medicine that we're living in today, patients are going from one doctor to the next, and many times those doctors may be focused on a very specific part of a disease or a symptom
or
a body part. And someone needs to integrate it all together. Someone needs to coordinate all of that together. And so this is, again, where I think it's a great opportunity for the VA, because not only do we provide health care, we provide so many other types of services that are important for health: housing, education, transportation. And so I think when it comes to care coordination, we want to leverage some of those different things that we have to seamlessly wrap around each veteran to make sure that they go in and out of the VA and the community more seamlessly. It won't be easy, because no one really is doing this to a T today. And so we're hoping to continue to refine and develop that model and that process as we move forward.
But would it be accurate to say that in this whole consolidation plan or this rationalizing of outside care, really one of the big elements of it is the VA medical facilities themselves?
That's right. We have a lot of various services that we offer, and many veterans choose and want to go to various VAs. And so it becomes very important to make sure that we connect the dots so that no one falls through the cracks.
And this idea of coordination would be between doctors outside and doctors inside.
Yes. It's as I was saying, it's what all of American medicine is facing today, as we are having a more kind of disparate healthcare model than before. Many times people would go to one healthcare system, they get all their care there. Now they're going from one place to the next, and making sure that those clinicians have information that they need to make sure they serve the patient in front of them, and making sure that the patient knows what's happening. And this care coordination is so important, because not only does it result in better quality care, it also results in really good cost efficiency. You don't want to repeat tests, you don't want to reorder studies, and so that really prevents some of that as well from a larger healthcare system perspective.